Yeah.
Welcome back to Gals and Gore Podcast. We're happy to see you.
Yes, we really missed you so much.
I think we've had too much caffeine today.
Oh my God, my body is shutting down on me.
I can see you have literal tears coming out of your eyes right now. Like I can see them in the camera just flowing down your face. Yes,
oh my God. And whenever I was pregnant for Evie and Sage, I would literally laugh until I cried every time. I remember this one time I saw a cat in my street and it turned around and I saw its butthole. And I cried. It wasn't even funny, but I cried so hard. And Brandon was like, "What the fuck?" And I was like, "That cat, I see its butthole, my God." And he was just like, "Alyssa, you need to go lay down."
Yeah, why are you even telling me this story right now about a cat butthole? Like, I don't know, but it feels right.
Yes, that cat needed one of those bejeweled things to put on his butthole.
those necklaces for cattails that cover their buttholes.
Yeah, what is it called? A butthole jewel?
Yeah, where can we buy stock in those?
That's the future.
The bejeweled future cat buttholes are the future.
Indeed, girl.
Oh my God. Well, it's nice to see you guys. Welcome to the Cat Butthole Show.
Da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Caffeine and cat buttholes. Woo. That's our next podcast right there. Caffeine and cat buttholes. Tell us about the biggest cat butthole you've ever seen.
Okay. Oh man, it was a big one. It
was so bad. Oh my God, I just don't want to spit coffee everywhere.
And whoever doesn't like talking before a podcast is probably gonna shit talk us now on that true crime.
Okay. You know my business motto, different strokes for different folks.
Yep. Indeed, girl.
That's how I feel about it. So if we're your kind of stroke, keep listening. So
any updates, gal?
Yeah, before we get started, please take a moment to pick your phone up right now. I see you. Pick it up. Get it. Grab your phone and rate, review, and subscribe to the Gals and Gore Podcast. And that is one of the biggest ways that you can help us out right now. So if you aren't sure how, because I remember I asked Jan, I was like, "Mom, go and rate the podcast." And she was like, "I can't figure it out." So this is for you, Jan. If you're not sure how, on your phone, head over to Apple Podcasts, search and click on Gals and Gore, go to the show, and then click subscribe right under the title. And then if you scroll all the way to the bottom and click on the number of stars that you want to leave, and then if you click write a review at the bottom, you can also leave a review. And there you go. Easy as that. You can also go to our website and click the subscribe and review button at the very top. We appreciate it and we love you guys.
Yes, we love you so much. And you know what? We love you even more when you rate, review, and subscribe.
We do. We love you.
Oh my God, girl. Guess what?
What?
We have merch.
Merchandise?
Yes, girl. Gals and Gore merch is up. It will be on the site.
An hour. I mean, like, we have, like, t-shirts, stickers, mugs, travel coffee cup mugs.
Onesies.
Hoodies, sweatshirts, onesies for your babies, phone cases, totes, pillowcases, anything you could ever want with our name on it.
Not Alyssa and Scotty, but the podcast name.
Gals and Gore. Yeah, we're also going to add some of our favorite sayings, too.
Yes.
So, go check it out. You will love it. You can get it on our, like Alyssa said, you can get it on our website, galsandgore.com. Mm-hmm. Also, if you follow the link in our Instagram and Facebook bios, you can find them there.
Shameless yes, girl. Words. You better get on that.
Before I say this next segment, I'm just going to give you a not suitable for work warning for the next part that we're about to talk about. So if you are anywhere where people can hear you, you might want to hide or wait until you're alone. Okay, so something else, just have to tell you, there is this other podcast that is called That's So Fucked Up, and I guess on all their other stuff, they're like That's So Effed Up, but because we are who we are, we're going to just call them who they are by their true selves. Yes, and their podcast is called That's So Fucked Up. And they talk about a lot of stuff that's just really, like,
fucked up.
Yes, like, you know, murders, cults. They spend a lot of time talking about cults, and I'm here for it because, mm-hmm. you know, I love a good cult. And so they sent us their promo, and I'm going to play it for our listeners because I think they would like it. What do you think?
Yeah, for sure. Let's do it.
That is so fucked up. It's fucked up. So fucked up. It is just so damn fucked up. That's fucked up.
This is That's So Fucked Up, a podcast about cults, murder, and other fucked up stuff. Like, really, really fucked up stuff. He cut off her nipples, tore out her heart, tied it to a rope, and hung it on the wall.
This cult has everything. Magic, rituals, child sacrifice, cloaks, daggers, and even a little arms dealing.
The fucking sharks ate Mark. Under the dinghy.
Strangled him to death so violently that he ended up asphyxiating on his own vomit.
Ugh. We're your hosts. I'm Ashley Richards.
And I'm Cameron Dexter.
Join us every Fucked Up Friday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify,
and everywhere you listen to podcasts.
That's fucked up.
So, I mean, I feel like they are like our twin flame podcast.
I know. Our twin, like our sisters from other misters, really. Yeah. Like,
for sure. I want to hear that story.
Yeah, I know. Like, for real, they're so funny and they're so helpful and they're really nice people. So you should give them a listen because it's good karma.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, gals, I am ready to hear about your case today. I haven't looked anything up about it as I normally, you know, like it's really hard for me not to do that, but I haven't done it. I'm ready.
Okay. I hope you're ready because this one is a doozy, girl. Today, we are going to talk about the murder of Arliss Perry.
Arliss Perry.
Arliss Perry, yes.
Okay, the murder of Arliss Perry. Let's get into it.
Okay, so, I mean, Arliss Perry was married to Bruce Perry, her high school sweetheart, and they were both, like, fucking all-American. I mean, like, they were raised in, like, this little quiet town. They attended the same high school. He was a bookworm and an athlete. She was a cheerleader and very religious and, like, super nice. And, I mean, basically, they'd make me sick because they were just like, you're the best. No, you're the best. You're the and best. I love you the most.
Yeah, like, come to my football game. I'll be there cheering for you. Like, got like, his football number painted on her face. Mm-hmm. Ugh, so cute.
Exactly. So, like I said, they met in high school, and when they were dating, Bruce actually decided to go to Stanford University, which was, like, over 1,500 miles away.
Stanford? He's, like, really smart.
He's super smart. And Arliss was like, okay, so we'll just keep seeing each other long distance, right?
Right. Totally. Always work it out.
Right. Yeah. Well, he went to Stanford, and he's in pre-med, and he just is so busy, but he still misses Arliss so much. So she actually moves up there so that they can be together, and they end up getting married.
Aww, so it actually did work out this time.
It actually, well, right now, yes.
Don't ruin my sense of happiness right now. I just really am happy for Bruce and Arliss, and I just
I know
to say that
and they
way.
Are really sweet. Like, she's super involved in the church. She's super nice. Like, aww. Nobody had a bad thing to say about her. And right. So she moves, you know, to be with him at Stanford, and they're married, and they actually move into, like, these married couple apartments on campus called Quillen Hall.
Okay.
So, I mean, like, just think of something, like, really tiny, right?
Yeah, like a married dorm. I know, like, a lot of colleges have those.
Yes.
And I don't know if they do that anymore, but it's definitely a thing. So, yeah, super small dorm-like environment, but you have to live with another person that you just married. And let me just say, as somebody who has spent the majority of her marriage in a pandemic and quarantine, it can get challenging.
I bet, girl. Tell that to me. two kids. Oh my God. Help. I was like, oh my God, somebody please come help me.
It's an emergency. We like got married and then went into lockdown. And I was like, no, I can't get away from you.
Oh my God. Stop. You love Jordan.
Yeah. Totally.
So, anyways, they're married and Bruce goes back to his pre-med, like, school workload. You know, he is, like, so busy in class and studying and everything. And so she basically is like, okay, I'm going to get involved with the church. I'm going to, you know, be a good wife. And she got a job being a receptionist for a law firm called Palo Alto Law Firm.
Oh, Palo Alto.
Yes, girl.
So she was just doing her thing. He was busy in meds and, you know, pre-med school, and she was busying herself with her job and just like really doing the dang thing.
Mm-hmm. Yes, girl. She sure was. And on top of all of this, Bruce said that Arliss would often go for walks or jogs around the Stanford campus because it was so beautiful.
Yeah, I know. That's one thing I miss about college, like the pretty campus. You can walk around everywhere.
Yeah, so except for down here, it's so fucking hot that you can barely do anything. So up there, it was like beautiful weather.
I have no comments on this weather because it got cold one day, and it was for my birthday. It got cold one day. It was like 56 degrees outside, and then it went straight back to Satan's mouth.
You know, I think it's really sad that we consider 56 degrees to be cold. Anyways, let's move on. So, I mean, while she was going on her little runs, she found the Stanford Memorial Church, which was on campus, and she became obsessed with it because if you've ever seen it, it's huge, and it's really, really beautiful. I will post pictures of the church online. It's this gigantic church, right?
She doesn't love beautiful architecture.
Yeah. And, like, one of the main drawbacks, which I think a lot of people can understand to her move with Bruce, was that she was super lonely because, you know, he was super busy. She really wasn't she wasn't from the area. She had no friends, no family there. And so in a lot of her letters and phone calls to her family and friends back in Bismarck, she told them, you know, I'm super lonely. Friends are hard to find here. And then many times she said, I've been tempted to go knock on doors asking if anybody needs a friend. But I guess we will have to appreciate each other and trust the Lord for new friends too. Girl, I appreciate your innocence, but my God, trust in the Lord for new friends, honey.
Yeah, there are a few things I could say about that. But isn't that so sad? I know that you've felt that way before, like when you are like somewhere new and there's just no, you don't know anybody.
Girl, whenever we were in St. Thomas for the summer, I didn't know anybody. And Brandon was like, amen, with his friends. And I was like, hey, you guys, you guys, what y'all doing?
It can be so depressing. I remember whenever I first moved to college, whenever I first went to LSU, I didn't know anybody except for my boyfriend. And she's like, I guess we'll appreciate each other, but like, there's only so much appreciating you can do. Like, you need some gal pals.
Yeah, you absolutely need gal pals. I mean, at least one. I don't have many, but the ones I have.
Yeah, and back in the day, you couldn't like, you know, FaceTime all day like me and you do.
Right. Which is sad. I mean, the fuck? Can you imagine me writing a letter to you and not getting anything back for days? I would be bored out of my mind. What did I do? What did we do in middle school and elementary?
We saw each other at school every day.
Yeah, but I hated to play outside. So, like, what do you do when you're not at school? Read.
Read.
Listen to my tapes.
Pretend like your life's better than it is.
Yes.
This what has tapes? Taken your a side tapes turn. That you made, or like?
Yes. I used to have the blank
focus
tapes.
Focus on my rap career and.
No, I had blank tapes and I had a big stereo, so I'd record songs that I liked from the radio.
Oh yeah, that was the best. But I thought you were like, you know, putting out your own songs, like, you know.
Girl, coming soon to a theater near you. No.
The Wolf Christ of the Blue Corn Moon. Mixtape number one.
Yes, that's me. Anyways.
Oh okay, back to Arliss.
Yeah.
Poor gal. Arliss. She is so depressed because she's lonely. We get it.
Yes, she's so depressed. She's so lonely. And, you know, So she, you know, she really only spends time with her husband, herself, and the church. Okay?
Yeah.
On the night of October 12th, things are relatively normal on the Stanford campus. I mean, they had people going, you know, back and forth from their dorms, you know, maybe from still to class and, you know, just a normal college campus, right? Mm-hmm. Right. Well, Arliss decided that she was going to go for a walk. And according to Bruce, this was totally normal for her to go take walks at night, you know, and deliver letters that she had for her family and friends to the mailbox. And right. On this particular night, he actually decided to go with her.
Oh, what a sweetie.
Right, so sweet. And the two took a short walk, aiming for a mailbox in the distance, and she had a bundle of letters to deliver to her friends, like I said, in North Dakota.
She's been writing.
I know, she is so sweet. And eventually, this little walk took a turn because they got into a little tiff about whose turn it was or whose responsibility it was to put air in their car tires.
Tale as old as time, honey. Who is going to do this chore? Yes, we get it. Whose turn is it? Who's going to take care of it? Mm-hmm.
I think, though, that goes to show, like, just how sweet and innocent they were, like, right. You guys are really fighting about this.
That was their biggest fight. Like,
right.
You're going to put air in the tires. No, you do it this time. I did it last time.
Right. And I would just fucking just do it. I wouldn't even say anything. I would just get mad and passive aggressively do it. And then friend would be like, oh, hey, you put air in the tires? And I'd be like, yeah, because no one else is going to do it.
Yeah. Nobody else around here does anything for me, so I'll just do it myself.
Exactly. So they had this little silly argument, and at the end of it, Arliss was just like, look, dude, I need some alone time. Like, she was, like, so innocent that this really riled her up.
Yeah.
And they said, Bruce told police that their argument ended, like, just before midnight. He can remember going home, and, like, it was, like, around midnight. Mm-hmm. So at the time, they were near the Stanford Memorial Church, the place that she always went to because it was so beautiful. And right. She told Bruce that she was going to go in there and kind of just pray it out and have some quiet time. And she told him, just go back to our apartment because it was only like half a mile away. Mm-hmm. And he said, okay, you know, let's just have our alone time.
So he knows where she's going to be. It's not like he stormed off and was like, fuck you, I never want to see you again. She was just like, I need some alone time. I'm going to go to the church, meditate, you know, I'll see you later.
Yeah, basically. Okay. And whenever Arliss actually went into the church, there were two people inside that noticed her at the entrance. And they said that she went up to the front of the church on the left-hand side and knelt down to pray. And they noticed her, you know, before they left. And I think that that was around midnight, maybe a little bit after.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And the two people who saw Arliss in the church noticed that a young man entered the church as they left. And they said he couldn't have been more than 25 years old and had parted sandy blonde hair. And he had, like, a medium build. And these witnesses only remember him as looking youthful and wearing, like, a short-sleeved blue shirt.
Okay. Which is not uncommon to have, like, a young man, you know, like, right. on Stanford's campus. So they right. probably weren't, like, super alarmed by that.
No, they definitely weren't. I mean, they didn't think anything of it.
Right.
Right. And all while this is happening, Bruce returned home. And, like, you know, he was just waiting for his wife to get back so that maybe they could finish this argument that was already started. Yeah. They're still on this. Like, you guys, give it up.
Go on. Why didn't he just, like, you know what he should have done? Men are so tone deaf, like we've said so many times. Like, he should have just gone and put the air in the tires. And when she came back home, just been like, look, honey, I already did it for you.
Right, exactly. Let's cut to Stephen Crawford, the campus security guard, because he was working the night of October 12, 1974, when this crime happened, and he was actually responsible for going around, making sure all the buildings were closed, locked up, and he was responsible for closing up the church the night Arliss Perry stopped by.
Noble profession. Thank you, Stephen.
Indeed. So the church closes at midnight, which is just minutes after Arliss was last seen by two eyewitnesses. Mm-hmm. And according to his testimony, the security guard, Stephen, said that he briefly entered the church and just yelled into the church, "We're closing for the night. The church is being locked for right now. If anyone's here, you'll have to leave." And he mm-hmm. said that he was running a few minutes behind his shift, so this was like shortly after midnight. Mm-hmm. And by his account, it was like 12:10 when he locked the church up, and he said he didn't see anybody in the church.
Okay, so she wasn't in there.
Right, he said he did not see Arliss. He did not see the sandy-haired man that the eyewitnesses saw. Mm-hmm. So he just locked up the church.
Okay.
Okay.
Right. So she wasn't in there. That was only like 10 minutes later.
Right. Odd. But we'll get to that. Okay. So across campus, Bruce was like waiting alone at their apartment, waiting for his wife to get back. You know, he's just waiting for her. I mean, he's nervous. They just got into a little tiff. He wants to make up, make out, go to bed. But, I mean.
Oh, yeah. Choo-choo. Everybody likes a little fight about tire pressure so they can make up after.
Do they? I mean, but by 12:15, he was starting to get a little nervous because they only lived half a mile away from the church. And right. Arliss had said that all she wanted to do was go have a couple minutes by herself, pray, and then she would be back home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he's starting to get worried.
Yeah, I mean, he's like, what's going on? You know, she should be home by now. It's not far. So he actually left the apartment and began to head to the church, hoping to at least maybe see her along the way.
Right, yeah, like catch her coming home or right. something like that.
Exactly. Sure. And he was super surprised that he was able to make it all the way to the church without finding her. And then even more surprised when he got there and the doors were closed, locked, and the lights were turned off.
The doors were locked. Oh, no. Okay, so I bet he starts to freak out.
Yeah, because then he went to the other side of the church and even to the back of the church to find that all the doors were locked. Nothing was, you know, amiss. And so then he did start to really freak out and started to, like, go all around campus looking for any sign of Arliss. I mean, it's not like she had any family or friends to call or visit, you know? And so he was like, where is she?
Oh my gosh, what a nightmare. Yes.
Right. And he also decided to look around, double check her route home, you know, just hoping that maybe she's still walking there or maybe he would find her at the apartment. But he didn't. So there was at least one eyewitness that said that they were walking by the Stanford Memorial Church and they heard a strange sound, but they didn't report that until much later.
Okay. What kind of strange sound?
It was not specified. It just says a strange, unusual sound.
Mm-hmm. Sounds very menacing.
Right. I mean, that's what I thought. I was like, oh, but... Even the like YouTube video I watched on it, it just said a strange sound. I don't know.
Creepy.
So Bruce eventually returned back to their apartment and he just found himself, you know, just being like, what the fuck? Where is Arliss?
Yeah.
I mean, he also, he just told himself like, okay, maybe she went on an even longer walk or maybe she even fell asleep inside the church. She'll be home any minute. And around 2 in the morning across campus, the security guard, Stephen Crawford, was making another round across the Stanford campus. And like I said, his job required him to make sure all the doors were locked, make sure nothing was crazy, nothing was going on. Yeah. And his job also required him to make a visit through the church and make sure that there were no intruders or stragglers. And he supposedly did just that. The doors were closed and locked, and he reported that he saw and heard nothing while doing this. And it wasn't until 3 in the morning, like over 3 hours since she had last been seen, that Bruce actually decided to call the police and report Arliss missing.
Yeah. Good job, Bruce.
Right.
For real. Yeah. Because she could have, like, I think what my thought would be was that, oh, she, you know, like, they closed up the church at 12. Maybe she went and took another, like, a walk all the way around campus. Or, like, she went and walked around the lake. Or she's just, like, just out trying to gather her thoughts, you know. And she doesn't want me to find her or be around her. So she went somewhere where I wouldn't know where she was. And then, yeah, after 3 hours, he's like, okay, the jig's up. I got to call somebody.
Yeah. And he told the dispatcher that he was worried that maybe she fell asleep inside of the church and had been locked inside.
Aww. Yeah, I know. I thought about that too.
Yeah. So the Stanford security officer responded to the call, heading to the Memorial Church. And it seems like they didn't really do much digging because they found the doors locked and they just reported that it was highly unlikely for anyone to be inside. No. I mean,
so they didn't go in and turn the lights on and look around or anything?
No. They just, you know, said, oh, it seems like this wouldn't be possible. And they just didn't even follow up.
Right. What year was this?
1974.
The 70s. Yep. Okay.
Right. And the truth about what happened to Arliss wouldn't be discovered until like hours later by the same security guard, Stephen, that had locked up the church the night before.
Stephen.
And what he found was like absolutely fucking horrifying. So it was like 5:30 in the morning when Stephen was making another sweep of the campus, and he was walking by the church and decided to just make sure that the doors were locked and secure, and then he said he noticed a side door had been opened. And so police would later find that it had been forced open from the inside, leading to like a lot of theories about what happened that night.
Yeah, somebody was definitely in there. Somebody had to have been in there if it's forced open from the inside.
Right. So investigating the open door on the side of the church, he went into the church and found the altar to be untouched and like nothing of value had been stolen from it or mm-hmm. the area. Right. So he was like, maybe it's just some kids, right?
Yeah.
But he continued to go into the church just to make sure that nobody was inside. Yeah. And on the left-hand side of the church, in the front row of the pews, where the last two eyewitnesses said that they had saw Arliss kneeling yes. down, he found Arliss Perry's body.
No. Why didn't they go and check earlier? That
girl.
I mean, I'm really glad that Stephen found her, but like, oh, well, and you know, I wonder if even if he would have went in at 12:10 whenever he yelled, you know, like, is anybody right. in here, if she had already been dead?
Right. Well, hope you're ready. So, okay. Arliss was actually naked from the waist down with her pants draped across her lower half, like almost in a ritualistic fashion. And so sad, but her last moments seemed to have been completely fucking terrifying. She had been beaten and choked to such a serious degree that you could tell that there was outside trauma, but that's not even what had killed her. Whoever had killed her had come and brought an ice pick with them, and they lodged it into her skull from behind her left ear.
Oh, my God.
I know.
What?
And that's not even the end of it. Either before she had been killed or even after her death, her body had been arranged and abused in a sadistic manner. Her blouse was ripped open, and her arms were held across her chest, holding close an altar candle that was placed between her breasts.
Oh my God, no, that is so creepy. And, you know, whenever you started talking about, like, her being partially nude and being choked and stuff, it's just so scary to think that she went to this place where she felt the safest, that she loved, was literally, like, a sanctuary. Right. And that something like this happened to her. This is so sickening and frightening. Oh my God.
Girl, that's not even the worst. Ugh. Worst of all was that a large 30-inch candle had been forced into her vagina, and her legs were forced to bend in what resembled a pentagram.
Her legs were bent into a pentagram?
What seemed to resemble a pentagram.
Oh my God. What the fuck? Okay, so we were just talking about earlier. This is so fucked up.
This is so fucked up.
I think this is one of the worst things that we've talked about so far on here. Oh my God.
It's really fucked up. I know.
Process it. Yeah, it is. Oh my God. So what did they do?
So, I mean, the security guard, Stephen, immediately called his supervisors, and they got in touch with the sheriff's department. And, I mean, they showed up right away to the church. And there were police officers there. There were detectives there. And, I mean, almost immediately the police headed to Arliss and Perry's apartment at Quillen Hall, and whenever Bruce opened the door, they were shocked to find him covered in blood.
Oh no, that just took a turn that I did not expect. Holy crap, I have never heard about this before.
So, wait, here we have Bruce covered in blood, and his wife has just been completely, like, brutally murdered, right?
But yeah, he's the one who put in the 911 call to, like, report her missing.
Right, but wait. The blood that he was covered in was his own. He claims that he gets chronic nosebleeds when he's stressed out. Girl, those police knocked on that door and they were ready to fucking arrest him right then and there.
You just gave me a heart attack. Poor Bruce. Oh my God. He's like, oh my God. I can imagine. He's just like full of anxiety. He's got these nosebleeds. The cops are like, it's you.
No, that's exactly what it was. They were like, uh-uh. We're about to arrest you. And Bruce is like, no, wait. It's just
arrest
a nosebleed.
Me for what? Yeah.
I know. And so then they had to tell him that his wife was murdered.
Oh no. And then
Yes.
And can you imagine he's just, like, so racked with anxiety all night that, like, he's getting chronic nosebleeds and, like, enough to where he's covered in blood and then he has to go through that ordeal of being told that. Poor man. Oh, my God. I can't handle this. Why did you do this to me?
I know. And as suspicious as he originally was to the police.
Yeah, for, like, 3 seconds.
Right. They weren't able to find anything or really much linking him to the crime, you know, besides the fact that he was Arliss's husband. So I'm sure there was DNA evidence, like, you know, skin cells and things like that of his on her.
Sure.
They're married, of course, you know.
Yeah.
And like I said, the blood was tested that he was covered in, and it was his. Mm-hmm. And he passed the polygraph, which I know, like, doesn't seem like a lot, but in 1974, that was a big deal.
Right.
And this was enough for them to eliminate Bruce as a suspect.
I mean, you know, it's almost always the husband, you know, so I do not blame them for looking at him and taking that avenue, but it is just so sad that, you know, having to deal with this, like, brutal torture and murder of his wife, that he has to go through that, too.
Right. And so going back to the scene, you know, I told you that there was that large 30-inch candle inserted into Arliss's vagina, but it doesn't appear that she had been raped. The candle was just found inside of her, and so there was no semen, no DNA inside of her, but there was a church pillow found near her body, and it was covered in semen.
Okay, so someone that's, like, doesn't want to maybe sexually attack a woman, but is pretty voyeuristic about it.
Right, and so they get off on, you know, like, the actual act of murder, or maybe even assaulting a body, but not the actual sexual act itself.
So could they tell if the candle was inserted pre- or post-mortem, or did they not know?
I really can't find anything, but I'm guessing post-mortem.
Right. That's what I was thinking. If she doesn't have any other signs of sexual trauma or assault.
Right, because everything looked as though it had been a set up, you know, like she had been placed that way. Like I said, her legs had been placed, her hands, she was holding that candle, you know. So I'm guessing that this was all after she had been murdered.
And so just playing a little mind hunter here, it seems like somebody who is definitely... or somebody who enjoys, like, the act of, like, choking, killing, you know, like, with the ice pick and everything.
Yes.
And then after that is what he, like, is where they find their enjoyment.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then, like, you know, speaking of the candle found in her vagina, they were able to actually lift a palm print from the surface of the candle. But they originally said that the palm print didn't match Bruce or any of the security guards or the security guard who discovered her body.
Okay.
So they really tried to focus on finding a match for the print, but they didn't have any luck. I mean, they had over 100 plus suspects that they looked at, but let's be honest, this is the 70s. Technology is not, you know, what it is today. And I think that they were really just, like, hoping for something big, and it just never seemed to come.
Yeah, I mean, today a palm print is awesome, you know, for all the stuff that we have in technology, but back then it's
correct.
It's kind of like hoping that something else comes up that matches. It's like a needle in a haystack.
Right. And so police determined that her time of death had been roughly midnight, meaning that whenever the security guard had swept through the church at 2 a.m. like he said he had, she would have been already there. So he lied. Remember how he said, oh, I already went through the church at 2 a.m.
Yeah, he said he was supposed to work through. Yeah, he was supposed to do a walkthrough.
And he said he did, but that would have meant that he would have come upon her body.
Right.
So we have
him. Like, it makes sense that at 12:10, he called in the church and was like, hey, if anybody's here, you need to get out. I'm locking up. and it was all quiet because she was already dead on the pew, like that totally makes sense. But if he did a walkthrough at 2 a.m., mm-hmm. I don't think he really walked through because, like you said, he would have seen it.
Right. And if he had done a search and if she was still alive, it's possible that maybe she was being kept hidden by her attacker.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. For sure.
Right. So, you know, maybe a little playing a little game, which is maybe he did, maybe he didn't. We don't know.
Right.
But
the palm print doesn't match him, at least.
Right. So, I mean, I don't know. That is one theory. But I think that if that is the theory, then whoever had murdered her had taken their time and really, you know, tortured her, which is a grave possibility.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like it.
And if this is true, then maybe she even heard her husband trying to open the doors and call her name.
No.
I know.
And then these people, you know, heard a strange sound coming from the inside or coming from somewhere around the church. And that could have definitely been, you know, whatever was happening in there.
So police had determined that the side door that Stephen Crawford found open had mm-hmm. been forced open from the inside.
Right.
And it would imply that whenever Stephen Crawford did do the check, whoever, like the killer, was indeed inside there with Arliss, her body.
Right, yeah.
So the killer was just inside with her body. She was already dead because we know that she had died around midnight.
Yeah.
So they were just sitting there jerking off on a pillow, putting candles where they don't belong.
Right. Yeah, that is super sick. Especially, you know, and if you think about it, a killer would have totally had time to, you know, in 10 minutes, he would have had time to strangle her, to kill her with the ice pick, and then hide whenever he heard the security guard, and
right.
then spend,
but not this,
you know,
elaborate,
the whole night
yeah,
doing whatever else he wanted to do to the body.
Exactly. And so, sadly, the memorial service for Arliss was held a few days after her murder in the same place where she had been murdered, which I thought was in poor taste, but I don't know.
I don't know, yeah. I mean, but it's like, it's in poor taste to murder someone in a church, if you ask me.
Yeah, it is, but I mean,
especially since that, like I said, that's where she wanted to go to find comfort and to feel safe and gain her thoughts together.
But, you know, like, at this memorial service, there was really no one there that she knew other than Bruce. And so they did have another service and a separate ceremony back for her in North Dakota, where she is from.
So all her friends could go.
Right.
Yeah.
And during her service at Stanford Church...
Before you say this,
uh-huh.
I just had a thought pop into my head.
Okay.
Sometimes the police will hold a memorial service at the site of a crime because they think that the person who perpetrated it will show up to the memorial service. Oh. So I'm wondering if
maybe
they, you know, were like, hey, let's do this here. You know, because whoever did this is obviously going to want to come back to the church. They're going to want to be a part of this memorialization.
Right.
Maybe they did that so that they could see, especially because if she didn't have any friends there and Bruce was like, there's nobody here to really mourn her. Maybe the only reason that they did that was to see if they could get the suspect to come back.
Right. And I mean, that is very possible. The way I took it was that the school felt responsible and they felt like they needed to do something for her. So it's thought both.
Yeah, it could be both ways. And maybe the police were like, yeah, Stanford, you know, if you want to hold this memorial service, we're going to show up and case it out and see if anybody, you know, like, looks or acts suspicious or anything like that.
So something kind of interesting happened at the memorial service at Stanford Church. One of Arliss's co-workers from Palo Alto Law Firm was there and was, like, super shocked to see Bruce. Not because of Bruce himself, because he thought Bruce was, like, a totally different dude.
What?
So, according to the coworker, Arliss had started at the law firm, and basically she was like, I told my husband not to visit me at work because, you know, I want people to respect me. I don't want people to think I'm just messing around over here.
Right.
You know, and, like, Bruce never paid her a visit while she was working, but another man had just before the day of her murder. And so the man who saw, he did. And so the man, the coworker, told the sheriff's department, they were like, Bruce is not who I thought he was, you know?
Yeah.
Because they were like, this guy that came visit her, though, did have blonde hair. And he stood about 5'10". And he was, like, stocky and just looked normal. But the coworker thought that that was her husband. And it wasn't.
So they obviously knew each other. If people were, you know, if people were confusing them for being husband and wife, it's not like he showed up and she was like, who the fuck are you? Get away from me.
Right. But this is what I'm thinking is, you know, she really was involved in the church and involved in, like, you know, some organizations that mm-hmm. tried to recruit people to come to church, almost like a missionary, but I guess like a domestic missionary, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, yeah. She was involved in a lot of, like, volunteer work in the community and spent a lot of time with the community. So it's right. out of the realm that she had, like, come into contact with this man during that time.
Right. And, like, the police were kind of thinking that, too, because right after they were told this, they really didn't do much digging into it. They were just like, okay.
Really? I feel like that's a pretty solid lead.
They did not follow up. They were just like, oh, how long was the visit? Who, what did they look like? And I don't think they really followed up onto it much.
Great.
Yeah. Yeah, which is odd because if you think about it, a man who is not her husband visiting her that closely resembles the description of a man who was also seen in the church at the night of her murder.
Right, but other eyewitnesses who are not related to this person, it's just too much matching up. You need to follow that lead.
Right, but they did not, so alas, here we are. Thank and God, though, are. That, like, with her funerals, the details of her murder were not publicly released. I mean, yeah. So everyone knew that she was murdered, but they didn't know all the, like, horrific details.
Yeah, as they shouldn't, because that's horrific.
Right. I know. But, you know, now that's, like, almost impossible to do.
Yeah, the media and everything.
Yeah. But around Halloween, like, less than 2 weeks after she had been buried, a temporary grave marker at her burial site was stolen. And so I think that this was just, like, a really heartless prank that somebody did.
Mm-hmm.
But some people who were involved in the investigation thought that this was, like, her killer, you know, come to steal something from her grave. But what they failed, which I had to do a little research, like, a little digging to see, because she was actually buried in North Dakota. So right. that would have meant that a person that. Would have had to go from her hometown,
yeah.
follow her to Stanford, stay there until she, you know, they were ready, murder her, and then come all the way back to North Dakota to steal her grave marker. I think, right. though, that it they kind of felt that way because some of her personal items had been taken at the scene of the murder.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were like, oh, this is just like another trophy. But I think that that's a stretch. And I think that whoever thought that did not put much thought into it.
Right. Yeah. I was going to ask that, like, where was she buried? But, yeah. you know, we know that murder is generally, you know, committed by somebody that knows the victim. So, I mean, right. it's not too much of a stretch that this person, you know, knew who she was from her hometown, did go to Stanford and did it. I mean, it is kind of a stretch, but
it's a stretch.
It's not out of the realm of possibility to
it's
me.
It's a leap.
It's
it
a
is
leap
to me.
Yeah,
yeah. I think it's
kind of
ridiculous.
A leap. And, you know, like, we talk about teenagers doing weird shit all the time. It wouldn't surprise me if they're like,
oh,
hey,
yeah,
do you
I mean,
to go and take the grave marker of that murdered girl?
Yes, yeah. for sure. I mean, especially, you know, people, look at us. People are drawn to the morbid,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I think that it was just some kind of stupid fucking prank.
Yep. I can see it both ways, but I think it's more likely that it's a prank.
Right. And I mean, girl, they just keep hitting, like, roadblock after roadblock. And I mean, they really have no leads until fucking David Berkowitz, son of Sam. He.
What?
Literally. He sent a book of witchcraft, a book about witchcraft, to North Dakota officials with a handwritten note that said, Arliss Perry, hunted, stalked, and slain, followed to California, Stanford University. Okay?
Oh my God.
But he could have found any of this in the newspapers, in the media, and
yeah.
I don't know if you're familiar with David Berkowitz, son of Sam, but he was responsible yeah. for, like, several murders that took place in New York City in like 1976, 1977. I think ultimately he killed like 6 people. He wounded 7 others. And he was arrested and he admitted to the crimes, and he had claimed that his neighbor's dog was Satan telling him to commit the murders.
To kill people,
And, you know, my stepdad, his son actually did heart surgery, open heart surgery on Son of Sam.
What?
Yes.
No way.
Yes.
You're fucking kidding me. That's insane. And this guy was also so, like, Son of Sam was so narcissistic, too, because he ended up admitting, like, yeah, none of that was real. Like, I didn't do that. I just wanted to kill these people. So that's... we always talk about like deathbed confessions are so selfish and dramatic. This is so selfish and dramatic to me. Like David Berkowitz was just like, I'm gonna go ahead and tie myself to this too while I'm at it because I'm fucking crazy. So,
yes, he had wrote so many letters to police and like really claiming like all sorts of things. And I think he really just enjoyed the attention. And I think that it is worth saying that a lot of the FBI investigators have gone on record saying that he is a fucking Looney Tune.
Yeah, he is. Out of his mind for sure, and he enjoys like sticking his head in where it doesn't belong. So,
right,
it does surprise me though that he, you know, like heard about this case and found it. It's just hearing Son of Sam pop up, you know, because he perpetrated all of his crimes in New York.
Yeah.
So, like, what are you doing, David Berkowitz? Like, what? Just shut up and stay in your cell.
He is crazy.
Yeah, like, what are you doing? Somebody needs to, like, take all his pens and pencils away from him. Like, you're not allowed to write anymore.
You are punished, sir.
No more creative writing time for you. I mean, he's the worst creative writing person, like, for their little prison program ever.
They're like, no one wants to read your letters.
Think about a time you were happy, and he's like, I killed this woman. And they're like, sir, that happened in North Dakota after you were in jail.
Yeah, and he's like, my dog told me to do it. Excuse me, sir.
My dog, who's also a demon, and is Satan.
No, I lie. It's his neighbor's dog. But anyways, besides the point.
He was yelling at him from over the fence in the backyard.
Right. Come on now.
We digress, but if you don't know about Son of Sam... Please, you need to look into digging. Them. Yeah,
maybe
he's
we can
fucking
do
a crazy.
Episode on him, but
yeah,
that was one little incident. I mean, something else that was seemingly related was Stephen Crawford, the security guard that was the patroller, and he actually found Arliss's body.
Right,
bitch. He was arrested for theft on Stanford campus in 1992. He literally was going through all the buildings. Stealing shit, just keeping it in his house, okay? Like, including, like, really expensive and old, like, bronze statues, books, like, hundreds of items. And he had been stealing from, like, multiple faculty members, staff, buildings. I mean,
a security guard that's also a klepto.
Honey, perfect. Just wait, because he actually was arrested and then he left. Arliss Perry's murder went unsolved for more than 40 years. And in 2018, they did a DNA test. And do you want to know who the DNA matched?
Was it our klepto security guard friend?
Yes, it was.
Oh my God.
Fucking Crawford.
Wait, where did they get the DNA from her on her
the
body?
The pillow.
Oh my God, the semen on the pillow?
Yes.
It was him?
Yes.
Girl.
Right? Like, came out of left field. Like, this dude is, like, helping. They say the palm print doesn't match, which I think that they just fucked up. They had to have, you know, like, bitch, came out of fucking left field.
Dude, I was like, ugh, I feel so bad because at the beginning I was like, thank you, Steven, for all of your noble work. No, fuck you, Steven. I can't believe you did this shit. What the hell?
Well, you're about to feel even worse because... Whenever they went to arrest Stephen, they broke down his apartment door, and he shot himself in the head right in front of investigators before they could arrest him or even ask him about the murder.
Oh, my God. How dramatic.
Well, he's dead, so, I mean, I guess he can't hurt anyone else.
Yeah, he also can't tell us that he did it either. He can't pay for his crimes.
Right, and I mean... I don't know. I do believe that this type of suicide is like an admission of guilt.
Yeah, for sure. Why would you kill yourself if the police, like,
girl, there was people all over Reddit. Girl, oh my God. I was so mad. I was like arguing with people on Reddit.
You went down the Reddit rabbit hole, didn't you?
Girl, I did. I was so mad because there were people like, no, they faked this DNA evidence and he committed suicide because he found her body and it really fucked him up. And I was like, first of all, girl.
Okay, 40 years later?
Yeah, first of all, girl, he's a klepto, okay? Yeah. Second of all, girl, he did that. He did that.
And there was stuff missing from her body, personal affects. So I'm sure, being the klepto that he is, he probably stole that stuff off of her body.
And, you know, don't you think it's strange that he never saw he did these walkthroughs and he made sure the church was locked. And at midnight, he went in and was like, you got to leave. And there was nobody in there. Mm-hmm. That's a little strange, right? You did that, girl. Girl, Steven, girl, you did that. And you know what? It's not okay.
Steven, we don't appreciate it. We don't appreciate you taking the easy way out either. Like, this is not okay.
Answer for your crimes. Poor Arliss Perry and her family and her husband, you know, and Bruce is actually...
Her adorable husband, Bruce.
Girl, Bruce is actually, like, well-known. He's a well-known doctor now, and he is married, and he is has been, like, actually recognized for all his work helping people after the Oklahoma bombings.
Oh, my God. Bruce.
I know. Sadly, though, he does not talk about Arliss's murder, which is understandable, I think. Yeah. You know, that really fucked with him.
Yeah.
I'm saying this like I know him. Like, me and Brucey go way back, you know, but...
Me and Brucey Bruce. But, you know, like, yeah, for sure. He just sounds like he's living his best life. And, you know, we need to give him credit for that. He moved on. He's doing his thing. I wonder if he still gets nosebleeds.
I'm sure.
The Oklahoma bombing was very stressful, so I wonder if you got any nosebleeds then. Anyway, no, I think it was Steven. If you ask me, because, okay, yeah, he killed himself because he saw what, you know, he found her body and he saw what he saw and it really screwed him up. But 40 years later?
Girl.
After he'd been working and doing all this other stuff, stealing shit from people, all of a sudden he's like, oh my God, I can't take it anymore. At this exact moment, the police are running through my door. I don't buy it.
Exactly. I'm like, gal, enough. Enough is enough is enough. I have had enough.
Enough of you, Steven.
I've had enough of your lies, enough of your thievery, and enough of your bullshit, Steve.
We know you did it. And we know you can hear us.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Gal, I'm telling you, this case really fucked me up, but honestly...
That was a roller coaster ride. I am like, you took me up, and then you just brought me down. Like, you were like,
girl,
he entered the door, and he was covered in blood. But it was his own. Oh, my God.
I know. I feel like that Kermit meme where he's like, oh! No. And, you know, I mean, I feel so bad for Arliss's family. And, you know, they just got answers, and this was so long ago, and I can't even imagine thinking, like, oh, my God, this man found her and then tried to play it off like he didn't fucking do it.
Right.
Ugh, so annoying.
I mean, and that just goes, again, for the theory that, like, people who commit crimes generally, I mean, and that's, like, an old adage, you know, like, they always return to the scene of the crime. Because they want some sort of recognition. They want to watch the police find it, and they want to watch the police try to figure out who did it.
Yeah.
And the only thing that doesn't really match this theory is that the door was, you know, wrenched open from the inside, but I think he just did that to make it look like it was somebody else.
For sure. I mean, he definitely could have, because he had been a security guard for a really long time. So he was obviously smart enough to not get caught for theft for quite some time. Right. And I think that any dumbass could figure out, hey, I need to make it look like somebody tried to break this door from the inside. That's like people who will fucking throw a brick through their window from the inside and the glass is on the outside and they're like, somebody broke in. Oh my God. File an insurance claim. And you're like, girl, you threw that.
Girl, you need to learn about physics. But I just don't, like, this does, it still leaves me with a bad feeling because I don't feel like there was any justice for Arliss.
No.
Like, if I was her family, I would still, I feel really bad for her family still because, like, the person who did this isn't able to be held responsible. I mean, yeah, he might be dead, but like he took his own life at his own hands and, right. and isn't, you know, having to face and stand up and admit what he did or apologize for it or anything like right. that. And it just makes me feel really bad for Arliss and for her family.
I know. I feel bad too. And, you know, I cannot imagine how her family feels, how her late husband feels. I just, you know, it's really yeah. sad. It's me really, either. It's a terrible injustice for her. And I'm just saying, thank God we have the technology we do today to, you know, give some sort of closure so that at least they know who did it.
For sure. I do hope that they have closure and that they feel, you know, because it's really hard to move on after that with so many unknowns. So right. I hope that yeah. gives them a little bit of a sense of peace. But either way, it's so horrible. Oh, my God. I wonder if he killed anybody else while he was doing all this and never got caught.
I don't know. And they'll never know.
Steven.
Oh, my God. Girl.
Girl,
you are the worst.
Girl. I don't even know where he is, girl. I don't know. But Steven, we don't like you. You're despicable. We hate you.
Yeah, Steven is a piece of shit.
Well.
So, there you go. I hope that you have enjoyed my story.
I don't know if enjoyed is the right word.
Oh, I hope you have.
It definitely really fucked with me.
God, I'm such a fucked up person. Why would I say enjoyed?
I'm gonna spend the rest of the day thinking
just
about that.
Feeling so bad.
Feeling so horrible.
Yeah. So, y'all, please, 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 I know we said this at the beginning, but please, for the love of God and all that is holy, go rate, subscribe, and review us.
Yes, we would love that. It would be really helpful for us. People would know that we exist, and we would turn into a real live podcast one day.
We want to be a big girl podcast.
For sure. And for any more information about this episode or any other episodes, you can visit us at galsandgore.com, find all of our pictures and sources, and you can also follow us on Instagram at galsandgore, all one word. Don't forget to also check out all of our new merchandise so you can show off that you're a Gore groupie too with t-shirts, mugs, onesies, and all the good things.
Yeah, come on. Support these old gals.
Support these old murder reporting gals. It's spooky season coming up, so you need
spooky season, y'all.
Spooky merchandise. You yeah. need it.
Oh my God.
Don't forget, you can also check out our true crime book recommendations, including the one that was covered in this episode, Who Killed Arliss Perry, on our Gals Recommend page for any true crime books. And then don't forget to check out our Gore Galore book chat recommendations, just in case you need some thriller fiction novel fixes.
Yes.
Well, thanks for listening to another episode of Gals and Gore, guys. We would love to hear what you have to say. Message us, email us. Snail mail us. Send a pigeon.
Yeah. Send your owls over here.
Send your Harry Potter owls. We will be receiving them. They'll know where to go. They already know us. So, yeah. Thanks for listening again, Alyssa. Thank you for that awful, awful story.
You are welcome.
Until next time, trust no one.
Murder's a killer. I'm talking about, like, from Hocus Pocus, where she's like, Boris. Oh, no, she's like, Boris. Oh, my God. I thought she said,
Boris. Oh, my God. It's Book. His name is Book. Hashtag Hocus Pocus.
Beat my pants. Oh, my God. Why the fuck would I think it's Boris?